Let me begin this morning by saying that the Reformation probably affected family government more than civil government or even church government. It's a pretty strong assertion, but from my study of history regarding the Reformation, the Reformation probably affected family government more than civil government or even church government. And the Reformation affected those two great governments massively. Even though the Reformation probably affected family government more than these other governments, it is the least written about and talked about by historians. Historians tend to ignore it completely if you read their writings about the Reformation. The best thing you can often do is read the writings of the reformers themselves to see how much they had to say about home life, about marriage and family, about family government. They literally produced thousands of tracts, pamphlets, and booklets on the matter of family. That's what the Reformation did. It was huge. It was an explosion. Starting with Martin Luther, we see the Reformation impacting marriage and family. Marriage and family were arguably the most satisfying aspects of Martin Luther's life, if you read about that man. And that is the first of three major points I want to speak to you about this morning, namely this: he actually got married. Martin Luther got married. His wife, Katie von Bora, said that when she married him, she had to burn his sheets because he hadn't changed them in 2.5 years. There's a man who needed to get married, right? You haven't washed your sheets in 2.5 years? She had to burn them. Marriage prior to the Reformation was viewed as the lesser position, the higher position being remaining single and devoting your life to God in celibacy. The reformers argued opposite of this and heralded to men the state of marriage and what the Lord intended from that divine institution. Totally turned everything on its head in the world of family government. Understand, Luther was a monk. Monks could not marry. He ended up marrying Katie von Bora. Katie was a nun. Nuns could not marry. Once Luther and then Katie came to know the Lord, he left being a monk and she left being a nun, and they married. It's a fascinating story, and you can learn about it in the sermon I did on Katie von Bora, which is on our sermonaudio.com place. She actually escaped from a nunnery. So my first great point about the Reformation impacting family government, marriage and family, is that they actually married and formed families. Literally tens of thousands who otherwise would have never married, married because of the Reformation. The clergy didn't marry. You understand that back then. They began to marry by the thousands. The clergy marrying was a huge transformation that resulted from the Reformation. It was as prominent to the men of that time as justification by faith was to the Reformation. And yet it's so little spoken of in our day, the impact that the Reformation had upon family government. This was a massive shift. The clergy and the cloisters, you know, where the nuns stayed, went from celibacy to marriage and families, and that was huge. Prior to the Reformation, churchmen heralded the monasteries and the nunneries. The Reformation turned all that on its head. The reformers heralded marriage in the home. Think on that for a moment. A huge shift in the culture. An interesting point I would like to touch on just briefly regarding this matter of cloisters and nunneries regards how feminists often view that in our day, When you read the writings of feminists today, or talk to them out at the university if you go there to minister, they hate the reformers. And they actually praise the cloisters and the nunneries in their writings and in their discussions with you. They hate Luther. They hate Knox. They hate the reformers. Why? because the reformers encouraged women to marry and have children. That's why they hate them. And why did they do that? Why did they encourage women to marry and have children? Because it is the natural order of things established by God himself. And the feminists hate the created order of God. They are in rebellion against God and his created order for them to be wives and mothers. It's a disdainful thing to them. They view that as oppression, being controlled by men, being denied to do what they want to do. It's all wrapped up in the usual human selfishness, which this present age is drunk on. So the feminists actually praise the cloister and the nunneries. Why? Because there women could study and learn and be their own woman and be free of the oppression the Lord has supposedly placed their gender under. These are the things they say and write. Now, if you know anything about the nunneries and the cloister and what was going on back then, you know how dumb the feminists are, how ignorant of history they are. But their hatred for Christ and God's created order is so massively strong that they damn the reformers who taught the created order of God for women to be wives, to be mothers, and praise the nunneries. That's how much they despise God's created order regarding their gender. Where the Reformation excelled, laws were put in place forbidding boys or girls from entering any monasteries or nunneries. And the truth is, many were completely closed down, eradicated. Some of them became places of evangelism where they would teach young men evangelism and send them out to evangelize. Laws regarding marriage also changed. The new laws included obtaining parental consent to marry and a public witnessing of vows. In other words, as people's lives were impacted by the theology of the Reformation, the laws themselves changed. That's a huge point. As historian Stephen Osmond has stated, quote, "Reform that existed only in pamphlets and sermons and not also in law and institutions would remain a private affair confined to all intents and purposes within the minds of preachers and pamphleteers," unquote. True Christianity impacts not only the individual, but the nation. And the laws changed because of the work that God was doing in the hearts of men. And it didn't take 51% for the laws to change. Those who truly know Christ are always the few. The way is narrow. But if they faithfully serve Christ, it impacts everyone in the nation, his rule, his thinking. The clergy became models of family life to those who embraced the Reformation. This is so important. The clergy became models. The clergy and their families became models of family life to those who embraced the Reformation. Their marriages, actually having children, unlike the ministers of our day who have all listened to Planned Parenthood and are limiting their children to one, two, or three if they're massively radicals, right? Their marriages, actually having children and governing their homes, became models to others. It was certainly true of Martin and Katie and continued that way among Protestant ministers for hundreds of years. Sadly, now, most ministers' marriages and families are just caricatures of the marriage and family life of Americans at large, which you may understand is at a dismal state. Martin and Katie had a wonderful marriage. When I read of their home life, the love, the bantering, the chiding, yet cherishing of one another, it reminds me of my life with Clara. Luther once wrote, quote, "A companionable woman brings joy to life," unquote. A companionable woman brings joy to life. And she does. In his later years, Luther said, quote, "There is no bond on earth so sweet nor any separation so bitter as that which occurs in a good marriage," unquote. Katie was a renowned herbalist and a brewer. She made awesome beer. Some was taken to the court of the elector as samples, sought after. Such a good brewer she was. She was an herbalist, which people from around the world would inquire what she thought could be done to heal. Pretty amazing, right? Upon his death, Luther broke custom, which at the time was to appoint a male trustee to administer his estate after death, and made Katie, quote, heir to everything, unquote. His example became the common practice in the years ahead. That's because the ministers and their families became models, which the families of the Reformation modeled their home life after. For those of you not yet married, Luther has advice. Here's what he wrote just one time. He wrote like crazy, okay? But here's what he said, quote, a wife is easily taken, but to have abiding love, that is the challenge. One who finds it in his marriage should thank the Lord God for it. Therefore, approach marriage earnestly and ask God to give you a good, pious girl or boy, if you're the girl, with whom you can spend the rest of your life in mutual love, for sex alone establishes nothing in this regard. There must also be agreement in values and character, unquote. Good words of advice. Luther was pointing out that physical attraction plays a role in creating a marriage, but it is not the foundation of a lasting marriage. Sacrifice and tender care for one another is what holds a marriage together over time. Did you hear that? Sacrifice and tender care for one another is what holds a marriage together over time. Luther later implored young people to, quote, beg God earnestly for grace and guidance, unquote, in selecting a spouse. And I can't agree with him strongly enough. When you find a good spouse, it adds to your life a goodness. So the first major impact of the Reformation was that people were actually encouraged to marriage. The second is that people were actually encouraged to have children. An anti-child mentality ruled in Luther's day as it does in our day. People didn't want to have children. In fact, if you read the history of mankind, this has been something that's been there forever. People didn't want to have kids. Luther had to war against this mentality in his day as we do in our day. In Luther's day, besides the wealthy, who never wanted to have children, other than their one or two, to pass all their wealth through and their power and prestige through, the anti-child thinking was promulgated through religion in Luther's day. The idea that one was more spiritual if they embraced celibacy and virginity over marriage to devote themselves to God. That was how the anti-child mentality was promulgated in Luther's day. In our day, the anti-child thinking is promulgated through secular selfishness, the idea of personal peace and wealth being paramount to the individual. In the end, I realize men can concoct various reasons from various presuppositions to justify not having children. Man has a long list of reasons why he can justify not having children. Yet it is the created order of God to have them. It's established well in Scripture that is a chief purpose of marriage, to have sons and daughters. Birth control was practiced prior to and during the Reformation as it is in our day. Just the technology has changed, and many forms of birth control in our day actually murder a conceived child. But understand this, all of the reformers that wrote on the matter of birth control condemned the use of birth control. Every single one of them. There wasn't one who embraced it. They condemned it because they rightly viewed it as an abrogation of God's created order regarding marriage. All early church fathers taught against birth control. All who wrote about birth control wrote against it. The reformers agreed with them in this. In fact, all of Christendom agreed, whether Catholic, Orthodox, or Protestant, for over 1,900 years. It wasn't until the 1930s that the first Christian body in the history of the world embraced the use of birth control. And I've preached about this in the past. And you want to learn more? A lot of history and great stuff. You can get my sermon, The History of Christians Having Children. Also available at sermonaudio.com. So the impact on family government actually caused people to marry, number one. Number two, the Reformation actually caused people to have children. Luther and Katie had six, three boys, three girls. And Luther tasted the anguishing pain of losing some of his daughters. He had three boys, three girls. Two of his daughters died before he did. One daughter was 8 months old, the other was 13. If you read about the anguish that Luther went through when his 13-year-old daughter died, heart-wrenching stuff. And number three, the Reformation, this is my final point, actually caused people to better govern their homes. Caused them to hold marriage in esteem, caused them to actually have children, and caused them to better govern their homes. Because like in any age, that was a problem when the Reformation started also. Disarray in the homes of the people. And again, that is why they wrote voluminously on this. It's where rubber meets the road. Christianity is demonstrated and displayed. Understand, marriage and family was in a sorry state when the Reformation took place, as it is in our day. The Reformers wrote volumes on the governance of the home and family, and so should we in our day. Not only did the Reformers herald the goodness of having children, but they understood and taught the duty of fathers and mothers to instruct their children in proper biblical morals. One scholar I read pointed out that the instruction of their children was designed to suppress selfish behavior and encourage altruism and self-sacrifice. Let me tell you, being the father of a large family, me and Claire have 11 children, 20 grandchildren now. Being the father of a large family, let me tell you, just having many siblings helps cure any child of selfishness and teaches them self-sacrifice. That's true. I've watched it with my own eyeballs. In other words, the children of the Reformation were not snowflakes who whined and needed safe spaces when things didn't go their way. They weren't offended by anything and everything that didn't line up with their thinking or their behavior or their plans. Rather, they learned to defend their position, not with feelings and slogans like the current youth do in our nation, but with rational thought. They developed their worldview and defended their positions. The Reformers taught parents in practical ways from a theological foundation how to bring their children up to be socially useful and responsible adults able to manage the world and to please God. In other words, they weren't taught to be perpetually adolescent like they are in our day. I love to tell the story about me and Clara dropping Jeremiah and Crispin off when they were 17 and 15 years old with their little window washing business over in Bristlecone Pines. You know, Bristlecone Pines is like over there in Heartland, like, yeah, you got some bread. You got some money. He lives in Bristlecone Pines. So I drop him off this humongous house, go around the block. Me and Clara happen to be there that day together dropping him off. Clara sees a garage sale. You know anything about Clara? There's a garage sale. We're stopping at the garage sale. So I wasn't in a big hurry for anything. I was like, okay. Go in, walk into this garage. This garage has like more square footage than my whole house, right? So Clara starts looking at all the debris, and I'm just standing there feeling out of place. And so I strike up a conversation with a lady who's running her little garage sale there. And I said, yeah, we just dropped off my 15 and 17-year-old sons around the block. They're doing your neighbor's windows. They started a little window washing business. She perks up. She says, well, you know a 15 and 17-year-old that will work? And I looked at her and said, yeah. She said, well, let me tell you, I have a 16-year-old, and he and his friends never work. They sit around and play video games all day. She's going on and on, ranting and raving about that. All of a sudden, this guy who was at the garage sale comes walking across, who I was soon to learn was her husband. And he walks up and he says, excuse me. I said, yeah. He said, did I hear you say that your 15 and 17-year-old started a window washing business? I go, yeah. He looks at me and he says, well, I just want you to know that I think you're an irresponsible parent. And he spent the next 2 minutes dressing me down how I'm stealing their childhood from them and all their nonsense. And when he finally stopped, and it literally was a two-minute rant, I looked at him, as I've learned over the years, often asking a question in a hostile situation can be the best thing you can do. Jesus did that. it's a good thing to do. So I looked at him and I said, do you know how old the youngest Pony Express rider was? And you could see it all over his face, like, what the blank does that have to do with anything I'm talking about? Finally says to me, he says, no, I don't. I said, he was 11. I said, many of them were 13. Could you imagine how many federal laws they'd be violating in our day? And then I go into my two-minute rant about how we keep young men perpetually adolescent, never letting them aspire to anything, contribute to the economy of the family, the economy of the community, and his wife is literally behind him going like this. Both thumbs up in the air, shaking her arms, loving every minute of it. And I'm realizing, okay, this is her husband. This is why your 16-year-old kid plays video games all day. You know, it's just like, and we live in a nation of 16-year-olds who play video games all day. We live in a nation of 30-year-olds who sit around and play video games all day. Like, and it's an insane asylum. It was far different what the Reformation produced. Far different. They gave their kids purpose. They showed them from the Word of God what their design was as men, as women. This is what you do. America breeds perpetual adolescence amongst its people. We're a nation of people that refuses to grow up. The Reformation taught something wholly different. And the West grew strong and expanded because of it. The Protestant work ethic had a huge impact. Even the Christ haters have to acknowledge that. And it was all rooted in theology. By the way, just to throw in another Luther quote that I love, he once stated at one of his table talks that, quote, my greatest wish is that none of my children become lawyers. Now, if that doesn't endear you to Martin Luther, I don't know what would. My greatest wish is that none of my children become lawyers. As you know, I've been involved in civil government matters, you know, been arrested 70-some times. So I've had a lot of interaction with lawyers over the years. I'm a pastor. I've seen people get bamboozled by lawyers, taken advantage by lawyers, get counseled wrongly by lawyers, greed, wealth, blech. Most of the people who've made all the bad law in this nation are lawyers. Awful people. So when Luther says, my greatest wish is that none of my children become lawyers, I'm sure he had other great wishes too. This is just one that happened to be recorded at one of his table talks. You know, you can just hear the evangel. Oh, he said that his wish is his son. He didn't wish that he'd be a great missionary. He just wished that he wouldn't be a lawyer. He's stupid. You know, we got these great thinkers. These young men are such great thinkers in our day, aren't they? So many of them are great thinkers. They don't think they're way out of a box. And they got older dopes who teach them to think that dopey way. You know, this is a huge problem. People read one book and they think they're an expert. One book, one topic, one historical era, I'm an expert. I know everything. I read a chick track about the Catholics. I know everything. You know, about that history, I know everything. You know, it just disgusts me. It's like, get a clue. I can assure you that wasn't Martin Luther's only wish for his children, that they don't become lawyers. Crazy. By the way, I've only met 9 good lawyers. I still can't fill up both hands in all my years of being around them. In fact, I went from 8 to 9 just in the last 48 hours meeting that legislator out in Washington who's a lawyer. I'm like, I didn't even realize he was a lawyer. Jason tells me later, you realize he's a lawyer, right? I go, what? So I'm like, man, I'm almost up to filling up both hands. Then I'll have to go to my toes. But that's how few good lawyers I've ever met. And when a lawyer's a good lawyer, they're awesome. They're awesome. One of the most important contributions that the Reformation brought to family government was family worship. This is so dire and so important, men, if you want to properly govern your homes. Institute family worship in your home. Don't let it own you. Don't become like, we're going to have family worship now. Okay, sometimes days get busy and you can't do it, okay? There's this little virtue called flexibility. You roll with the situation. You might not be able to do it at the same time that you want to do it every day. You might have to move it to a different part of the day. You might have to skip the whole day. That's okay. You're still right with Jesus. Okay? You're okay. But family worship is massively important. It communicates to your children that Christ is important to you, that his law, word, and gospel is important to you. Very important stuff. Took me years to instill it in our home. I saw the difference it made once we did. And I soon saw the difference it made when I neglected it. How things would begin to break down and chaos would begin to ensue. Doesn't have to be long. Go through a book, verse by verse. You might read one verse. You might read a whole chapter. Doesn't matter. You ask questions. You know, don't assume that your children know what you know. That's a dumb mistake I made years ago. Oh, they live in my house. They know everything I know. No, they don't. That's why we catechize. That's why we communicate to them the faith. You have to pass it to the next generation. 10-15 minutes is all you need. It isn't like you need 45 minutes or an hour. Do you know how long that is to a child? Yes. Rethink back when you would go shopping with mom. Okay? This is, to this day, I despise shopping. You know, I try to wear my clothes as long as I can because it's like the last thing I want to do is go look for some. Okay? I view it as a great burden and chore. I always wonder about men who are all bothered how their wives like to shop. It's like, let them go for it. Who would you want to do it? I don't want to do that. You know? It's crazy stuff. So think about it. Waiting for your mom to pick out what she was going to get at the store. Didn't that seem like days sometimes? I can remember sitting on the floor of Hudson's rolling around as a kid, trying to entertain myself while my mom was picking out whatever it was she was picking out. And so you don't do that. You know, it's 10 or 15 minutes is plenty of time. Ask questions, talk. Communicate, build your relationship with each other as you talk about him and his word. The reformers were big on this. They did much to instill it. They even had within their congregations often men, elders who would go to the men in the church and talk to them. Are you conducting family worship in your home? That's how important it was to the Reformation. So, the vast majority of Christian men today do not do family worship in their home. And I'm talking like 95% do not do family worship in their home. And the truth of the matter is the ministers are about the same percentile. Almost 90% of ministers don't do family worship in their home. Is that crazy? I remember several years back me moaning to another pastor about how I talk to people in our church about doing family worship, and still only about half the men in our church, only about 50% actually do family worship in their home. And he's, after I was done lamenting this, he looks at me and he goes, "You have 50% of the men in your church that are doing family worship?" I go, "Yeah, from my best of my estimation, just talking to them or asking them here or there." He goes, "You should be praising God." So, I've never met anybody where 50% of the congregation is doing family worship in their homes. You should be thanking God for that. So that was my whole life story. I always looked at the glass half empty. So in my old age, I'm learning how to look at it half full and be happy about that. It's like Jason always says, start with this standard. Mankind sucks. You know, so I expect nothing from mankind. So anything positive that comes from mankind is a step up. Right? It's something to look, yeah, this is awesome. You know? This is awesome. Anyway, I can't encourage you strongly enough to instill family worship in your homes. If you're a single mother, you need to do that too. Extremely important to conduct family worship in your homes. It's a goodness. When people visit or the grandkids come over, you can do it then too. It's they see, oh, this is a Christian home. Christ is loved and honored here. So the first major impact of the Reformation was that people were actually encouraged to marriage. The second is that people were actually encouraged to have children. And number three, the Reformation actually caused people to better govern their homes. Let's stand up. We'll close in a word of prayer.